It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. With daily records of COVID cases being shattered across Pennsylvania and locally, Allegheny County's Health Department director recently issued a stay-at-home advisory, which says people should only leave home to attend work or school or for essential needs, like medical care or food shopping. County Executive Rich Fitzgerald joins us now. Welcome back to the Confluence.
Kevin, good to be with you.
In her announcement of the stay-at-home advisory, Dr. Deborah Bogan expressed frustration, disappointment, and even anger. What is your reaction, as it seems many people are not taking the necessary precautions?
Well, it is frustrating in many levels because we certainly know what we need to do. We've certainly learned this over the last 8 months since this began in mid-March. And Dr. Bogan has been very communicative, having many, many briefings once a week and sometimes more often to talk about what we need to do. And the vast majority of folks in our region have followed those guidelines and really have, and it's been very good. And particularly when we're in our structured environments, we're at work, we're at school, we're at a sporting event. I mean, people are wearing their masks, they're going to the store, they're wearing their masks, they're staying distant. And then parties break out on the weekends or after work or in the evenings. And, you know, Halloween parties were specifically tough thing for us because so many people had them and the spread was pretty big. So it is frustrating. You know, people know what to do, but sometimes let their guard down. And the one thing we learn about the virus is the virus never lets its guard down.
You've been pretty consistent in your messaging, but it's obviously not resonating with some people. Have you even considered changing what you're saying to get through to some people who aren't listening?
Well, I mean, you want to tell the truth and tell scientific fact, and that's the message. And so you want to continue to encourage people to do what we know the science tells us to do. But yeah, the frustration is you have some people that, you know, want to say, well, we've been so good for so long. The kids deserve to have a party. The kids deserve to have a sleepover. The problem is, again, the virus doesn't reward, what the kids or what anybody, any of us have done. So while we certainly love to watch a Steeler game with all of our friends and pack into a living room or a game room or whatever, we still need to make sure we're doing the right thing, really 24 hours a day, because the virus doesn't stop on the weekends. It doesn't stop in the evening. And, you know, we know what we need to do. And again, I think we're getting close, too. We're getting close to a vaccine. So it's almost like we got to do this for a few more months and then, you know, we can start to get back to normal living.
Dr. Bogan cited one particular example of what she called willful disregard of public health measures. Parents from Plumboro School District organized a dance for their children, which was held in adjacent Westmoreland County. She said they ignored state restrictions on capacity, and there are confirmed COVID cases, and that parents refused to provide information on who attended. Does the county have any legal recourse to require parents to comply with providing that information?
We're looking at that, and it's disappointing that these irresponsible parents who not only went against state policy, county policy, and the own school district policy that said we're not going to have this, they went, you know, they snuck across county lines, took 150 people with them, and now they're basically covering up what they've done. So it's so irresponsible that these things would occur. And, you know, we're hopeful that the folks in Plum, and there's a lot of good, most of the people in Plum are very responsible, do good things, and you've got a few irresponsible parents that have led them astray. And we're hopeful that we're able to contain it and that certainly other parents in other school districts and other venues don't follow that example.
Philadelphia is also seeing a surge in cases and reimposed restrictions effective November 20th. For example, indoor dining prohibited, indoor gatherings, public or private, of any size at any location banned, outdoor gatherings, 10% of occupancy, theaters, gyms, museums closed. Can you do stricter mitigation or another shutdown without an influx of federal stimulus money?
It would be difficult because so many people have suffered. Businesses have suffered. The employees of those businesses have suffered. So we are hopeful that the federal government, I know they've been talking for a number of months, but really we're at the point now where we need Congress, the House, the Senate, and the administration to come together, get a package that can help people that are truly in need.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bogan said if the spread of COVID-19 continues, she'll have no choice but to enact official public health orders. What might that involve? Might it be something like Philadelphia has already done?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, one of the things that Dr. Bogan and her team have done throughout this pandemic have tried to be strategic, follow the case investigations and the contact tracers to see where this would be occurring. You got to look at it strategically, which is what they've done throughout this, rather than do just a blanket, because most businesses, most schools, most the official operations, whether it be a hair salon or a gym or a retail establishment, a pharmacy, they've been doing very, very well. I'll give one other example. So we had a couple of hundred people for a couple of weeks counting ballots at the county warehouse that were all indoors for many, many hours at a time, and we didn't get cases there because people were wearing their masks, they were keeping distant, they were all following the medical procedures that we've all learned. So even in a very difficult environment, it can be done, and it can be done successfully without spread. Where we see spread is where people don't follow, they get too close, they take off their masks, and they're together for extended periods of times, and it just explodes.
So you mentioned businesses seem to be adhering to recommendations, but how do you regulate private settings where, according to the data, many of the cases are occurring?
That's the challenge. I mean, you really can't. You can't regulate, you know, what people are doing in their living room. You can't regulate what people are doing in their backyards or on their porches or, in non-official settings. It's almost a peer pressure. It's almost family members within their own family saying, we can't have Thanksgiving this year the way we normally do. We can't have the get-together to watch the Steeler game or to watch some other event. So it's almost individuals taking responsibility and, quite frankly, being the mature grown-up in the group to say, no, we can't do that this year. Next year, hopefully we can if we get back to normal.
I spoke with State Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine last week, and she said the state is not considering another shutdown. So do you think it's up to each county to consider its own situation and take any additional measures, such as what Philadelphia is doing?
Well, again, I think that would be difficult to do. We're not just one county. We'd probably have to do it regionally, and that obviously couldn't be done without state support. I mean, so many people who work or live in Allegheny County, they come from Westmoreland County or Beaver County or Washington County. So, again, if a shutdown would prove to be effective, then I think it's certainly something to look at. But again, to just do a shutdown, which will have no effect on the virus, because people are still going to be home, they're still going to be interacting with their neighbors and their friends. So you want to do things that make sense. You want to do things that the science and the data tells you to do, not just in a reactionary way, just because some people think it sounds good.
We've been advised not to have big celebrations during the holidays. You and your wife, I believe, have 8 adult children. What are you doing this Thanksgiving?
We're not having Thanksgiving. We actually had our Zoom call the other night, and 3 of our out-of-town children have decided to stay put for the weekend, and the ones who live locally here are going to be staying in their houses and apartments. It's like a lot of families. We're going to miss it. We're not going to have it. And we hope others, and again, it's not a government order to not have Thanksgiving. It's really a suggestion to just be careful. You know, most of us, and I can tell you in our family, we'd have 20 people, my nieces and nephews, my parents, you know, cousins, et cetera. That's not going to happen this year, and we're going to miss it. There's no question. But we realize, you know, that to stay healthy, to keep other people healthy, it's the responsible thing to do. So we know that this coming weekend, which really starts on Wednesday, the long, you know, holiday Thanksgiving weekend, which is a big weekend traditionally for people to get together. Wednesday night's one of the biggest, you know, get-together nights, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. And then, of course, Thanksgiving and then Black Friday and et cetera, the beginning of hunting season. I mean, you have all kind of things that kind of come together where we've traditionally got together as family. Those things need to change this year, and we're hopeful that people do just that.
Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald, thanks so much for your time.
Good to be with you, Kevin. Take care now.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pfizer and its partner BioNTech reported that their coronavirus vaccine is more than 90% effective. Biotech company Moderna said last Monday their experimental vaccine was nearly 95% effective. Because of these promising early results, Pfizer is requesting emergency authorization use from the FDA for their vaccine. Moderna is expected to also seek authorization. If the FDA approves, a vaccine could be in people's hands by early next year. But this presents another problem, vaccine trust. Gretchen Chapman is a professor of social and decision sciences at Carnegie Mellon University, where she studies the psychology of decision making. Thanks for being here.
You are very welcome. Happy to be here.
In 2019, the WHO named vaccine hesitancy as one of the top threats to global health. Have you learned about reasons why people distrust the vaccines?
There is a lot of research on what we call vaccine confidence, which is sort of the flip side of vaccine hesitancy. Survey measures of vaccine confidence are strongly correlated with vaccination behavior. Conceptually, we think of vaccine confidence as having three parts. Positive attitudes about the benefits or effectiveness of the vaccine, negative attitudes about the fears that the vaccine is not safe, and then the third component is trust in the provider in the system that that develops the vaccine and distributes it. Interestingly, the trust part of the vaccine confidence measures is not what predicts vaccination behavior. Hmm. It's beliefs about the effectiveness and the safety of the vaccine that is the strong predictors.
Right.
When we have a brand new vaccine like the COVID vaccine with not a lot of information yet, it could be kind of reasonable to be a little bit skeptical about what the effectiveness and safety is until we have more data.
Mm-hmm. Trust. I'd like you to follow up on that. There seems to have been, having talked to some individuals, a particular lack of trust, or not the level of trust you might want, within the Black community for vaccine. It stems from decades of mistreatment at the hands of doctors, researchers, and the government. So what kind of investment needs to be made in rebuilding that trust?
Well, that is an important and very huge endeavor. Our current medical system was not built with African Americans in mind. For example, hospitals weren't integrated until the 1965 Medicare legislation. Rebuilding a system so that it includes everyone is no small task. For at least some vaccines, we don't have much of a race gap. For example, I was looking at the CDC data on flu vaccination rates, and white and Asian Americans are a couple percentage points ahead of Black and Latinx Americans in terms of flu vaccination rates, but it's only a couple percentage points. It's not a big gap.
So whether it is trust or belief in the effectiveness of the vaccine, how can governments, pharmaceutical companies, others, harness what we know about the psychological processes underlying the decision-making to facilitate what you have called pro-social behavior, in this case, vaccination?
Right. That's really important. Vaccination is a pro-social behavior because my vaccination doesn't just protect me. It protects the people I come in contact with, because once I'm immune, I can't spread the virus to other people. I think the main message I would give about encouraging vaccination rates is not to focus only on changing people's beliefs and attitudes, but instead focus on also on structuring the environment to facilitate vaccination behavior directly. So I'm talking about things like convenient, making the vaccine very accessible, making it free, issuing reminders that COVID vaccine is going to be a two-dose sequence, so you have to remember to go in and get your second dose, setting up the environment so that getting vaccinated is the easy course of action. An example might be pre-scheduling people for vaccination appointments that they can cancel or change if they don't want them, rather than asking them to make an appointment if they want the vaccine. Mm-hmm. Utilizing recommendations from physicians, which are strongly recommended with vaccination behavior. In fact, there's a particular type of recommendation from a physician that is particularly effective, where the physician communicates that vaccination is the standard of care. So you're due for this vaccine, we'll be giving it at the end of the appointment, rather than let's discuss whether you would like to receive this vaccine.
Does it matter who delivers the message and how they deliver it?
Yes, a trusted source is always better. There's data that patients adhere to medical advice more strongly when they receive that advice from a same race physician.
Vaccines usually take up to a decade to create and distribute. This vaccine, if it begins distribution late this year, spring of 2021, at least for widespread distribution, will shatter all those records. Does the pace at which the vaccine was created possibly add to any misgivings or distrust?
I would think so, yes, because a reasonable lay belief would be that the more time you have to gather evidence about a new vaccine or other medical technology, the more confident you can be about what you know about it. But at the same time, we know from research on vaccination behavior that people's beliefs about vaccine development and vaccine safety and efficacy are only part of the picture. And that social factors like what other people like you are doing, what people you trust and admire are recommending you to do, those factors are also really important and I would think would be less influenced by the fast pace of vaccine development.
Could the fast pace of the development be offset by just maybe the fears and just acknowledgement of how deadly this virus, this disease has been? And saying,
for sure. I mean, that's why we're fast tracking, right? Because this pandemic is devastating and we need a vaccine quickly. So of course it makes sense to fast track it. And so there's sort of competing motivations here of to get protection, but then also to be sure that we really understand all of the effects that the vaccine could have.
Gretchen Chapman is a professor of social and decision sciences at Carnegie Mellon University, where she studies the psychology of decision making. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kevin. Happy to be here.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Laura Satsui, Joya Zenkovic, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.